On this episode of Breaking Bread, I'm so thrilled to welcome Chef John Karangis. John is the executive chef and vice president of culinary innovation at Shake Shack, where he oversees global menu development. John spent the early days of his career working at Union Square Cafe and the Gramercy Tavern in New York City. He joined Shake Shack after 7 years as executive chef for Union Square Events, the catering, and venue hospitality business of Danny Meyers. During his time there, John has overseen culinary efforts across all facets of the business. And today I'm so thrilled to welcome Chef John to this episode of Breaking Bread. Chef, how are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you so much, Vera. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so excited. I must admit, I am number one Shake Shack fan.
It's good to hear.
Chef, I'm so interested in exploring, as I do not know so much about your background, but I really am curious what led you to this moment in your career prior to your time with Shake Shack. What were your earliest memories with food and experiences with food?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'm happy to share it. I think many people have, you know, sort of admitted this, you know, later on in their career that it hasn't been a clear path that one could actually predict. If you would have told me years ago that I'd be working for an amazing, you know, burger chain, you know, I probably wouldn't have thunk it, but it all sort of makes sense from where my career started to where it is. And, you know, I'm super fortunate to be where I am at Shake Shack. And it really just started with my love and appreciation for food, the craft of cooking. And then later on in my young career, realizing the importance of delicious and fresh ingredients, which weren't necessarily commonplace in my home growing up. It was a very different time. And although my mom was an amazing cook, she made do with what she had access to. And then, you know.
I come from Russia in the 1980s. So you were like, get some dry pasta of very horrible quality.
Yeah. So, you know, and then through my journey of sort of adolescence, I just, in my first experiences working were in a restaurant because that was really the only place at that time that you could get a job, quote unquote, illegally with what they called working or without working papers. So, you know, at 13 years old, I started working in a restaurant and, you know, I was doing all the tasks one would expect. You know, washing dishes, cleaning windows, and then sort of graduated to become a busboy. And then from there, the next progression was sort of to get in the kitchen. And that seemed to be where all the cool things were happening, right? It was fire and you know, sharp knives and chaos. And, you know, as a young teenager, you know, that seemed attractive at the time. So did that through high school. And then when it came time for college, you know, I had to figure out what that was going to look like. And I knew that I liked cooking. I loved at that time, it was more of a sport for me.
This place where?
So I was in Staten Island in my high school years. And when I was working in restaurants there, and they were sort of more of the sort of red table sauce, pasta joints, if you will. Cooking Italian American food, and I really enjoyed the, you know, sort of.
But still, a New Yorker.
Sure, sure. the fast pace of it all, and the environment. But then, when it came time for college, I wasn't quite sure. So I embarked on a journey into Brooklyn and joined the hospitality program at New York City College of Technology, which is, you know, it's a small program, but it does amazing things with amazing people for so many people. And that was really where I met some incredible professors that, you know, unbeknownst to me at the time, took me under their wing and saw something in me that, you know, maybe I didn't see myself or wasn't willing to admit. And, you know, I enjoyed those culinary and pastry classes, and I really started to, you know, immerse myself in that and saw new ingredients and new techniques, bread baking, making amazing stocks and sauces and those types of things that we all learn in fundamental cooking classes. But I started to experience it at a whole nother level. So from there, I was just going about my journey in college, and they sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, look, you know, we send two students abroad every year, and you know, we get to choose who they are, and we're choosing you as one of them, and we're going to give you the choice of where you want to go and do an apprenticeship." And the two options were Italy and France, and I couldn't remember the town if you asked me even 10 years ago, but it was either in Paris, France, or a small town in Italy. And of course,
I didn't know. It's a tough choice.
It was a tough choice. So I jumped on Paris and set forward on that journey of just being a stage in a very refined, fancy restaurant. And that really motivated me to continue down that path. And I saw and met amazing people. And it was at that time when I could really start to develop that passion for food and cooking, the art of it all, the ingredients.
Very similar experience with me, because I didn't think I was going to cook. But like yourself, I know that you spent beautiful time in Paris working at, you know, Restaurant Le Grand Louvre. And me, I happened to end up in Julia Child's apartment, to be honest. That's amazing. Best friend was married to at a time to Iranian, and they shared an apartment in Julia Child's, which was old Julia Child's apartment. So we would always look outside, and there was tourists taking photos, and we would always laugh. We thought it was so funny, and I didn't think I was going to be a chef at a time or a cook for that matter. But we had thrown gorgeous events, and it was very bohemian atmosphere. And I realized I've always loved food, but Paris really made it extra special. So when I came back to the US, I pursued a culinary career. But Paris was the city probably that made me see things in the way that I do now and shaped me, the person that I am. And from dining to cooking, and everybody I know who's based there, chefs and, you know, people like Alain Passard. Sure. And please do tell about your experience in Paris.
I mean, it was phenomenal in every way. I mean, I spoke sort of what we call kitchen French, and I was able to get by, and I was very much in my comfort zone, you know, being on the hotline or the cold line and navigating my way. But it's also, as we all know, it's an amazing city, and in some ways very similar to New York City, while being its own. And so I fell in love with the area, the people, the culture, the respect for food, the respect for ingredients, dining out, and you know, wait staff in Paris seems to be, you know, done at such an incredibly high level. You know, the florist in a restaurant are incredible, and so it totally captivated me in every sense of the word. And obviously, I spent a lot of time in the kitchen, so much that they would even send me home and tell me not to come in early again because I was just having so much fun. At the time, there was three shifts. There'd be a morning shift, a mid shift, and a PM shift. I'd go in the morning and stay all day. And, you know, I just was just so enamored and loved every part of it and saw so many new things. And, you know, live langoustines were coming in the restaurant, and, you know, pigeons and all these different things.
Whale and, yeah, all the wild game, which is, you know, still not quite as popular in the US, which is a shame, but yeah. The mushrooms and the chanterelles and the vegetables. Yeah, beautiful produce.
Absolutely.
So how long did you stay there?
So I was there for 4 months and then returned back to college, finished that, and then it was time to, you know, seek employment. And one of my
professors... Were you cross coming back?
I was, you know, it was definitely bittersweet returning home. I mean, I knew I was about to sort of, you know, wrap up college and
reality
work. And I was excited about that because, you know, I was, you know, very much itching to, you know, turn that page in my life and, you know, embark on my journey of my career. Although I didn't want to necessarily leave Paris to do that. I just knew that that was the prerequisite. So, moved on, went back, to college and, fortunately, I had the opportunity to meet with, Danny Meyer and executive chef Michael Romano, who was the executive chef at the time for Union Square Cafe. And that was long before. Go ahead. Question.
How did you guys meet? This was my next question.
So one of my professors knew them and sort of recommended me as they were looking for folks to join their team. So I was lucky enough to have that introduction without having to send the, you know, resume at the time via fax. Although I think I had to send it, but then I had my meeting with them and started working a couple of weeks later
at the Gramercy Tavern.
So no, that was Union Square Cafe first.
Union Square Cafe, which is owed to that.
So that was my
20s. It was so lovely.
That
place. And so that was fun, but then there was Gramercy Tavern.
Correct. In between Gramercy Tavern, I got the itch to travel again. So after almost 4 years of working at Union Square Cafe, which I absolutely loved, I just had the desire again just to see a different city.
Natural.
And just travel and explore more like I did in Paris. And so Danny Meyer had arranged some employment for me in San Francisco. Saying my goal was to go out there for about a year and just sort of check it out and see how it is. And at the time, San Francisco and New York were considered the two, you know, sort of best high-end food capitals.
Which it still is in a way.
Yeah, I think so.
LA is a really kind of up and coming. Well, LA, I find lately is number this year, maybe 1, 2, 3, New York, San Francisco, and LA.
Chicago's another great one, right? Chicago, Miami now. You know, it's
Miami, not in my opinion, but anyway, back to you. Yeah. So you ended up in San Francisco.
So I went out to San Francisco and I worked for Joyce Goldstein. She happened to be a close friend of Danny's and was running an amazing restaurant at the time for a long time. I think we're about 25 years, called Square One. It's a very much Mediterranean rooted restaurant, a lot of open fire cookery. You know, there was definitely a level of rusticity to the cuisine, but done so with a lot of thought and care and outside influence, global influences into the menu. So that was amazing for me to see that. And then I also worked at Stars Restaurant, which was Jeremiah Tower's long running, you know, sort of quintessential San Francisco legendary restaurant. And that was, you know, that was amazing as well. So I was fortunate to be there at that time and then returned back to New York and worked at Gramercy Tower.
And so tell me about, I mean, who didn't have the burger from Gramercy Tavern? I don't know a person that didn't, but what a burger.
Yeah.
But my question to you is, was this the precursor to your time at Shake Shack? Was it somehow correlated or how did
sure. Well, I think there's a common denominator. I think the common denominator for me
and
why I'm here is Danny Meyer. And Danny has...
And you make a great burger.
Danny's done an incredible job of building businesses that feel good to a lot of people, not just guests. And he's been able to create a culture within his businesses that have spread far reaching beyond those businesses. And he's impacted my life, you know, outside work as much and as great as he has inside. So that's why there's no secret. When I went out west, I sort of returned back. Then there was a gap in my career when I left the restaurant business for reasons of really just wanting a schedule that was more conducive to a quote unquote normal life.
I think it's very central. Everybody goes through that.
Sure.
Me, I'm in this current situation, to be honest, but it's a shift always.
Yeah. And that was, and that's the hard, that was probably the one time in my career after at that time working 14, 15 years in a restaurant, working all the demanding hours and the schedule that it requires.
And you want some me time.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that was, you know, that, and then I shifted and started to work in the corporate sector. And I was the executive chef for Goldman Sachs for 8 years.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah. So, you know, the other common denominator to all of this, regardless of where I went, I was still incredibly passionate about food and fine dining and all that that applied. So
it doesn't go away in a flash.
No. And I didn't want it to go away. But I also knew that if I'm leaving the fine dining part of the business, then, you know, that might need to be a part of that that I would lose. And I would, you know, not knowing it at the time, but I would resist that. So when I started to work at Goldman Sachs, I was working out of their executive dining room, and we would do a lot of high profile, very sort of private events of, you know, fine dining style and high level ingredients. But we also oversaw cafes for the employees as well as a lot of their clients. So all through that, my goal was, you know, to really elevate that in a way that I knew it could work, even regardless of whatever cost constraints there were. So if it's an employee cafeteria where they're spending $10, $12 a day for lunch, I sort of took the approach that you could still go to the green market and buy really great organic foods and charge accordingly and work within that. But no one was really doing that at the time. So I saw an opportunity and I wanted to take advantage of it. And I did. And I stayed there for a long time. And I think in large part because I was able to do that and others allowed me to do that. And that was 8 years. And then I joined Danny again. A few members of his senior leadership reached out and asked me if I wanted to go and join Union Square Events, which is the USHG, Union Square Hospitality Group, catering and events division. And I said, no way am I going there. That's 365 days a year, morning, noon, and night. You know, at the time I had two children in diapers and a 6-year-old. So I can't do it. And that's one of the reasons why I went to go work in the corporate sector, even though we worked hard, long hours. Generally, you had weekends off.
It was more structured.
Correct. And that was important for me because at the end of this all, I want to live a life that
I want to spend time with my children.
Correct.
Simple human needs.
Absolutely. But I went anyway. And so I joined Danny again at Union Square Events. And I had an amazing time, and I saw another great opportunity there was to take my love and passion for, you know, all the things that make up fine dining, right? Using great ingredients.
And very simple.
Simple and but elevating.
I think in general lacks outside of, you know, capitals like LA and New York and Miami. The rest of the country is still in that mode where there is no appreciation for simple things, and it's either fast food or fine dining or just fast food. And it really can be just a simple meal done well and on a budget using seasonality. And we're still a little bit behind.
Yeah.
But sure. I think it's moving slow, but we're getting there. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's
pioneer a little bit of that.
I think we all have that responsibility to push further and you know, do things that you know, aren't necessarily expected, and, you know, challenge the status quo. And, you know, I saw that opportunity in Union Square Events, and I would tell my team that, you know, we have an obligation and responsibility to cook the type of food and serve the type of food that, you know, that is served at the best restaurants in New York City. And, you know, if you're on board for that journey with me, then let's go. And if you're not, that's okay too.
That's my vision.
but this is my vision. And so we had an amazing team there. There's still an amazing team there. And we were able to, you know, do lots of things with a lot of thought and care, again, borrowing from the fine dining world and then incorporate that in catering. So if we were doing a 1,000 person seated dinner, let's say 4-course dinner in the middle of Central Park, clearly without ovens, it might be more challenging to do. But, you know, if you put your thinking caps on hard enough and you do a lot of research and some practice runs, you'd surprise yourself what you'd be able to do. So, and scaling food to me at that time then started to excite me. How can we take something and do it at a high level for a lot of people? So that was a fun
time. Very difficult. Anything above even 20, but especially that's not in the kitchen. I mean, I've done dinners at galleries where, fine, we can do crudo, you can do the soup and reheat it, yada yada yada, bring a sous vide, dessert is pre-done. But volume is volume.
I love volume, Barrett.
But that was my next question. I mean, how do you elevate, you know, a common experience of fast food, right, which we talked about, typically thought of like McDonald's or Burger King, to the masses? I mean, it's a completely different thing of Shake Shack. And I mean, growing up in Russia, there was 3 McDonald's. To me, it was so exciting to go once a year with my father after dentist. I mean, nobody ate fast food. It was just, everybody had homemade meals. But for me, just to have a little hamburger and French fries after dentist appointment as a treat was so exciting. And of course, it's nowhere in comparison to the quality of Shake Shack, but it's just, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we look, you know, I draw from inspiration today from those businesses that you mentioned. All the others that have been around for years and years and years, if there's that many people going there and enjoying what they're doing, there needs to be a reason why. And it's my job to understand what that is.
That helps. That's a big...
Yeah.
Or beer. It's just, it's incredible. I live on 85th, so my location is 2 blocks up. And it's a Sunday treat or Saturday treat. So what might... what inspires you when you create, when you do collaborations with chefs? Do you guys come together? Do you discuss, how do you come up with the collaboration between chefs?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, especially if they're coming from the fine dining sector and, you know, trying to sort of fit it into the package that, you know, we provide here. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think lots of times it really isn't as difficult as it might seem. A lot of those conversations are, you know, well, I know what you do. You know what we do. So people already have this sort of preconceived notion of what it is or could be. And lots of times chefs have an idea of what they want to do coming in because they know what our menu is. And they may say, I want a chicken sandwich that you know, has this and that on it, or I want a burger that has this and that on it. And then, you know, the competitive nature of it all starts to, you know, percolate and we usually get to a place that we're really happy with. Then we'll taste it a few times and, you know, maybe adjust, you know, the viscosity of the sauce or, you know, the heat or, you know, the portion size or whatever those things are. But it's really collaborative and it becomes inspiring. Lots of times we want to recommend some of their signature items. And there's sometimes when they want to, you know, show something that, you know, maybe they, you know, haven't shared with others before. So it's really an exciting process where kind of like a kid in a candy store, because lots of the folks that we do collabs with are people that, you know, we admire and have admired for years and years and years. So we're sort of giddy just to even be in the conversation. And we'll do everything in our power to make sure that, you know, their brand is represented and themselves are being represented as great as, you know, and as much care that they would want it to be. And also make sure our brand is represented really well. So it's a really fun process.
So I know you're working on something with Enrique Olvera, but I was there in Tokyo, as we discussed before, off camera, yeah. Where we did a collab with then Shagzai Hasegawa, who I worked for maybe 3-4 weeks, I was in Tokyo, and it happened to be my day off. So we just made the best of it with sake and a burger. You were only allowed one per person. I got that 9 o'clock in the morning. It was, I think, 2-hour wait line. But it was a very delicious burger. It was marinated in red miso and the pickles and bacon. And I have pictures, and I think I look like the happiest person on the planet.
That's good to hear.
And I think it was something like during the week, and all my friends from Tokyo who actually live and work there, they say, "Oh my God, I can't believe I can't be there." They missed out, but I got lucky. I'm so curious to know, can you spill some beans about what's happening with collab with Enrique Olvera?
Yeah, sure. So we're going
to
have our second collab with Enrique and his team. The first one was in Mexico City, and it was a great success. We have a few shacks in Mexico City. So that was amazing. And then we talked way back then when we did this, that eventually we'd love to do something stateside. So now's that time. So we're actually going to have 2 days in New York City in our West Village Shake Shack, a collab with him. That's happening in November 9th and 10th. And then the following week in LA on November 14th and 15th, we're going to have the same experience, which is a 2-day collab. And super excited about it. It's going to be a little different than some of the sort of collabs we've done in the past, where it was one item that was sold to lots of people for one day. This is actually going to be a little more of a fine dining experience meets Shake Shack experience, in the sense that we're going to serve a more limited amount of people, a more full-rounded menu. So there'll be 4 courses of 4 different items that we've collabed on that'll be served in our shacks, again, both in New York and LA.
The burger, is it the fries and then the dessert, like a certain shake, like sort of like a sesame shake?
Correct.
So, and so what else is there? So it's the burger.
There's a cocktail. There's a tamal.
Alcoholic beverage?
I'm sorry?
As an alcoholic beverage, like
mixed. Correct.
Oh, how exciting.
Yep.
What time is it open?
Yeah. Well, we should get you there.
I'll be the first one at the door.
Yep. We're excited for it.
Yeah. So the beverage, the burger.
Yeah, it's a beverage, a burger. There's a fry.
Fry.
And then there's a shake that's based off one of his signature desserts, his cornhusk meringue, which I'm assuming you know about that dessert he has at Cosme.
Yeah.
It's quite delicious. So again, it's taking a lot of the ideas of that chef, in this case, Enrique, and flavors that he's been celebrating through his journey, and looking for a way to tie it into our food and the items that we have in our shack, and present it in a way that speaks to both brands, with as much pleasure as, you know, we want to give it. And we were able to, you know, walk away with a menu, and now we're ready to present that menu, and we're super, super excited about it. It's going to be delicious.
Fabulous. Well, I must say, a part of my tradition I typically work on Thanksgiving. So the next day is typically when I don't cook. And my favorite thing to do is A, go to Shake Shack in the morning, and B, get the Christmas tree. So these are my first go-tos after a difficult day of cooking Thanksgiving, typically, whether it's for clients or for family. But Shake Shack and Christmas tree is my number one thing to do.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just cannot wait. I'm counting days for Christmas tree and Shake Shack. But not that COVID is somewhat over, I think we can safely say that it's taken a lesser form of, what was it like for you? How did you evolve? Was it negative? Was it positive for you? What did you make of it?
Yeah. From a work perspective or from
both personal and work wise?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely, as we all know, it was a real big challenge to sort of, you know, make sure we were staying healthy and keeping our families healthy. That was first and foremost, you know, with the information we had. I'm sorry?
I loved mine. I had the best time in every, and I know it sounds probably selfish, but because I'm sure you have to be sensitive to people who got sick or lost loved ones, but sure, both professionally this is how we developed this platform. So yeah, for me, it was positive, but please let's go back.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, aside from the, you know, the situation that we all had to deal with, you know, the work aspect of it was probably the most sane, right? Because that's what I know. You know, we may not have been knowing exactly what was going on with the world, but I knew I could, you know, my family was home, yes, and I was working, and, you know, when I wasn't working, I was home. And I actually, you know, like to take a lot of pride in taking advantage of opportunities. And, you know, although there was, you know, a time when we didn't know what was happening, I kind of submersed myself in my work at home for about a month and then started making my way back into Manhattan. And then just being in the kitchen by myself, really, and just continuing to develop and innovate items, which was a lot of fun. It was kind of bizarre with everything happening, but I knew that, I kind of look at cooking as a sport, an endurance sport. I love endurance sports. I participate in them. And I know, like in any sport, you always want to get an edge. You're always looking over your shoulder and trying to see what, you know, what someone's doing or if they're watching.
Ever personally, but then again, it was very sensitive time for restaurants that were, you know, hit and sure, had to close. There were that I admired all over the world, whether it's London or Paris, and probably most of it happened in New York and London because there's not so much outdoor space, and the chefs that I admired had to suffer. It was a bit challenging because I felt like I was thriving because I was busy, and whether it was teaching Zoom classes, cooking or other things, or doing private parties of really small groups and keeping the mask on. And this is before vaccinations, but it was a bit sad knowing chefs that you admire and love that had to shut down. So it was, I'm doing great. They're not doing great. So
yeah.
Sad, but you know, here we are because of this platform, and that's why you're our guest, and we developed this. And I think people were stuck at home, and they were thriving for recipes and travel destinations. And you can still make something of it in a positive way, other than unless it's health related, of course. But sure, I think it was a very interesting time, and in a way, it's—I don't know if you can call it evolution, but I think a lot of positive things came out. There were negative things, of course, but I think it's individual. But it was definitely an interesting time. I think it's global pandemic doesn't happen in every life.
No, it doesn't.
No. Do you have any plans? What are you? You're a busy chef, but do you have any plans for travel and food destinations that are coming up for you?
That's a good question. I mean, there's going to be some travel. You know, we have this collaboration with Enrique Olvera, so super excited about that. So, so my team and I will be doing that first in New York, and then going out to LA. And then there's a couple of other, you know, sort of research things we're trying to figure out on what to do. Obviously, you know, as our shacks continue to open worldwide, we, you know, unlike a restaurant, you know, if a restaurant down the street is opening another one in Williamsburg, they usually sort of like double up their team and pick their chef in front of the house manager and just go and, you know, make it happen. Not the way we do it here at Shack. You know, years ago, we used to do it that way when we were really small. Now we've got this incredible team of people that will execute these openings and do the training for us. So I don't have to do that. There's a lot better people doing what they do than I can do it. doing that for us. So a lot of our time spent here in our innovation kitchen is really continuing to develop new and exciting food and drink for our shacks. That's number one. Number two, right behind it, is we're always looking at our core menu, all the items that have been on our menu for years, and looking at ways to improve them if we can, or whether that be, you know, by way of flavor, by way of...
I don't know how much improvement you can make, and that's being honest, because it's
gross. Yeah.
But perfection is the chef's art. They're always just...
Yeah, I mean, we're always challenging.
That's a component where it's like, how can I make it perfect? Whether it's food or when I'm home, I'm thinking I'm moving furniture around. It's a OCD, really.
I mean, if someone asks you to cook the same thing over and over again, do you ever feel the urge to, you know, tweak and adjust it?
As a private chef, I have these challenges because you have to cook what...
Sure.
That family wants you to,
sure,
or the
sure.
client. But yes, there's a part of me that's always, it's like a twitch, and you say, oh!
Same. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to change anything just for the sake of change or my desire.
But
I do believe that there's always, you know, we should always look for opportunities to you know, fine tune anything we can. And that's a big part of what we do here. We try to challenge something, and it's hard to do if you have something that's really successful. But you know, I think it was, you know, a long time ago, it was said that you didn't need an iPhone, right? And look what happened. It changed the world. So I think there's ways to, you know, continue a refining thing, even if the guest doesn't see it. Sometimes we make minor adjustments to something, and it's not necessarily worthy of a giant call out. But, we believe that all those little sort of additions or subtractions can have a great impact on the overall experience for our guests. And that's our main goal. The main goal isn't for me to do what I feel like doing that day. It's you know, it's how do we take care of our guests?
Two big questions before we go back to perfecting our skills. Number one, I have to ask this. Because you do cook burgers on a daily basis, so you think about that. A, do you ever get sick of it? Because, I feel like I could never get sick of such a simple, delicious thing. However, you know, when you go to, for example, when I was in Lisbon for the second time in my life, which is one of my favorite cities, I go to this restaurant where there is this guy, Silva, who makes the most perfect crab I have ever had. And this is after Japan and Spain, all over the world. And he just, it's a secret recipe. And he's been cooking the same thing for the last 40 years. And my first question to him was, do you still eat the crab? He said, no, I can't look at the crab. I hate this. The guy despises the crab. Does it apply to burger? I mean, could you ever hate the burger just because, or can you ever get sick of it just because you cook it on a daily basis, just the smell? I know personally that I make different meals every day, but if I cook that meal that day, I can't have that meal even for myself because I didn't have the smell and prep. I just do not want anything to do with it whatsoever. I want complete opposite. So how does it work with burgers?
For me... I don't know how it works for burgers. I'll tell you how it works for me. I don't get sick of, there's not.
You can't get.
I don't get sick of any food item. I'm not going to eat the same food item every day, but I love food. Again, for me, it's the artistry of assembling. It's the, you know, the search for perfection on how you season something. You know, the level of care and thought in how something gets manipulated in the process. For me, that all is, you know, sort of like it's poetic and it's really enjoyable. You know, I don't eat the same anything all the time, but I don't get sick of burgers. There was a time I was making a lot of pizza. I didn't get sick of that.
You can't have a crab every day. It's simply not pot. And I love crab. very important question before we see each other until next time in your test kitchen. What is your perfect burger? What do you like in yours? I must know.
For me personally, I mean, for me, it goes back to, you know, my childhood.
That's when your food memories are created.
My food memories from my childhood. I love texture. And I think in large part, it's because of the cereal we grew up eating. Because when we were kids, if you were eating a healthy breakfast, you were eating 2 to 3 bowls of cereal. And that was usually loaded with sugar. But it was also really crunchy. So I'm a big texture person, a big sort of crunchy person. So by way of a burger, I love like crisp lettuce, pickles, raw onion, tomato. That's just me. I love American cheese. I love a nice warm bun. Pretty simplistic. It doesn't need ketchup, although my fries need a ton of ketchup.
Oh no. See, I need the ketchup on the burger, ketchup and the mayo, but fries, I don't really need anything, especially if they're Shake Shack fries. Mayo and the ketchup.
I need a little mustard on my burger because it makes me lean a little bit to my Steak Free or Steak Diane in my Parisian days. So I kind of maybe fuse those together, but really simple and just, hopefully seasoned well, cooked well, and enjoyed with some great people.
And voilà. So, John, it was so lovely meeting you and talking about your inspirations and burgers. And I can't wait for the collaboration as well as visiting you. And thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. I'm sure I don't know a single person that's not a Shake Shack fan. So you, in a way, you're a hero. So thank you for being here with us. It was such a pleasure. And I'll catch you soon.
Thank you, Vera. Appreciated being here. Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
A bientôt.
Bientôt.
Ciao.
Ciao.